Hello, Ted. Heel Truth, the greatest faction in professional wrestling history, the Four Horsemen. That's the Heel Truth. I hope that your podcast grows and has thousands and thousands, hundreds of thousands of listeners. Ted, the Heel Truth, there is Heel Truth. And I, for one, know what the Heel Truth is. Goodbye from Tully Blanchard.
It's now time. It's now
for the critically acclaimed, award-winning podcast. Still number one in Antarctica. That's right. The Heel Truth Wrestling Podcast.
With your host, Ted. The Heel Truth.
There's the real truth, and there's the Heel Truth. Welcome back to another episode of the Heel Truth Wrestling Podcast. I'm your host, Ted, the Hillbilly Heel. And we just thank each and every one of you for coming back another week. Had a lot of great feedback on last week's episode, Buy, Sell, and Hold. Everybody seems to like that. So let me just tell you right now, on the one I talked about, Sheeta, I said she looked like she might be turning heel. But I did say that could be long term, so I didn't lie. Even though now it looks like Saraya and Toni Storm are heels. Technically, Sheeta has to the end of 2024 to turn heel. Okay, so I'm not wrong. That's why there's the real truth, then there's the heel truth. This is Tully Blanchard who gave us that great intro. He never said I quit in his I quit match against Magnum TA. And I stick with my predictions same way. Okay. I never said that he was going to turn immediately. I just said that was a prediction. So I've still got the rest of the year. But I do like Saraya and Toni Storm turning heel because Saraya to me seemed like a heel when she first came in, talking about how she was from another place and putting down the women's division. And Britt's promos actually seem more like a babyface. So now maybe we can get her and Jamie Hayter to turn face so the chant fans can cheer them and, you know, switch the dynamics up. At least there's some different storylines going on in the women's division in AEW. All right. Let's see. Again, all the love and support everybody's given me and my family through this last month before Christmas, you know, last couple, well, 2022, a couple weeks ago, a month ago, Christmas. And if you don't know what went on, you can go back. I got a couple episodes where I talk about loss and archives and my thank you episode. And we still want to continue to thank each and every one of you. You know, you support us. And we appreciate it because you can find us on all your audio platforms, Apple, Spotify, Google, Amazon, all those places. Only on Twitter as far as social media, at Hillbilly Hill. And five-star reviews. I've got an Apple five-star review to read at the end of the episode. But if you leave us a five-star review on Apple, I will read it. Or if you leave a five-star rating on Spotify and you want to say something, like I read last week, you can go on Twitter and send me a DM, you know, or maybe if you see the pinned tweet that I put out for this episode, you can put something in the replies and say, hey, you know, just give me a screenshot of that and tell me what you want and I'll read your review. Okay. We want to give everybody a shout out for that. I do that in my pinned tweet, which usually goes out on Wednesday or Thursday. And, lots of great accounts, lots of great podcasts in there. So, you know, just appreciate each and every one of them. I do want to give a shout out to the Armchair Booking Podcast with Steve and Dwaylen. And they are doing a great series about why we are fans. And they're just having everyday people, friends, people they've met on the internet. So be sure to check that series out because that's just something great because, you know, all of us that listen to these wrestling podcasts, watch wrestling, you know, we're fans. So why and how did we become fans? So that's just a great episode or series of episodes. Let's see what else we got. Oh, that pin tweet that I put out all them shout outs. If you don't want to be shouted out, just drop me a line, say something. It fills up your notification box. You don't have to block me. Okay? That's all I'll say on that. That's all I'm going to say. You know. Also, I need to give a shout out to Jaded Wrestling, my old buddy Taylor, watched a little bit of Monday Night Raw, the 30-year episode last night. Some good stuff, some bad stuff, but either way, that's why usually this podcast drops usually at midnight or a little after midnight on, you know, early Tuesday morning, sometime during the wee hours. But I watched some of it, so I didn't get to record this till Tuesday morning. But I had told Mr. Taylor that it looked like Damage Control was going to turn on Bayley. And I was predicting it would happen before the Rumble. Well, after last night's cage match, looks like they're going to stick together for a little bit longer, probably next week, right after the Rumble. But we sort of had a bet, so I'm shouting out Taylor on air to say I go ahead and concede that it will be after the Rumble before they turn on Bayley. So, therefore, Mr. Taylor, I give you your adieu. All right? But I will caveat it in saying that who knows what could have happened if the original plan would have happened. Because I heard this morning that that match was cut extremely short because of the Bloodline segment at the beginning of the trial. So maybe I didn't lose Taylor. Maybe they were planning on doing it there. You know, there is the real truth and there is the heel truth. So maybe I take my concession back, Taylor. You know, I mean, that would be like somebody saying, you know, the Bushwhackers are better than the Sheepherders. Okay. Some of y'all don't even know who the Sheepherders are. Go back and look at their matches. Okay. That's one of those things that I stand by, that I love the version of the Sheepherders better than the Bushwhackers. Okay. So that's just me. But anyway, this episode, what are we going to get into? Let's see. I have one plan, then another plan, but then, you know, plans change, just like on Raw, just like the cage match. So let's see what we can get into today. So as I said, I decided to change up this week's episode. Modified a little bit from something originally I wanted to do. But last year, I did one on heel tropes. Like common things that used in, you know, character storylines for heels. And one of them was the rich heel gimmick. Well, today I want to talk about something else. I want to talk about tables. That's right. Get the tables out. Fans been chanting, "We want tables," ever since the ECW days of the 90s, okay? And it carried over into WWE and all that up until even today in AEW, people yelling, "We want tables." Now, why is the table a heel trope? Well, it started out as something a heel would do, to put somebody through a table. Now, of course, now with gimmick matches and different things, it's a little bit different. And everybody uses tables, baby faces, heels, but think about originally what the table could do. Okay, the table spot. You're a heel. You've got the baby face out on the outside of the ring. You put him through a table. Okay. You could get disqualified, and it protects you from getting pinned. It can also be a method of putting the baby face through a table and then the heel rolling him back in the ring and making it a way that the babyface can lose the match and still look strong. Because normally, if him and the heel were having a straight-up one-on-one wrestling match, the babyface is going to win. But the heel had to use some kind of underhanded tactics. And for years and years back in the day, it was commonly the foreign object. The heel would use a foreign object, whether it be brass knuckles, whether it would be a roll full of quarters, the horseman. J.J. Dillon had to have the most powerful shoe in all of wrestling. He would hit somebody, take his, I mean, they look like penny loafers, but he would take it off and hit somebody in the head with it, and there you go. You might use the ring bell. You know, you had all sorts of things. The chair shot, of course, but you want something to incapacitate. Let me rephrase that. Knock your other guy out, okay? So you'd use something to make them where they were weak, where they were staggered, where then you might do your finishing move or some way that the heel could win. And that's been used for decades. But then we get the table spot. Now, why are tables good? Okay. A lot of us think about the chair shot. You know, even with, or let's go back to the brass knuckles. Let's start there. A heel hits somebody with brass knuckles. The face can sell it. They can make facial expressions. They may even bleed. But we in the audience, we've probably never been hit with brass knuckles. So we've got to register it. Okay? So the chair shot comes along. Why is the chair shot so good? You can sell the chair shot. Again, just like brass knuckles. We've probably never been hit with a chair, a steel folding chair. But when we hear the sound of it, see, it adds another dimension to the emotions. Think about when you're eating, okay? When you're eating, you see the food. You get visual. You smell the food. You get the sense of smell. Then you taste the food. So you get the taste of it. So you get those three external senses that cause a, you know, in your brain. Okay, well, when we're watching a wrestling match, a lot of times all we can do is see it. We are seeing it. We hear the commentators trying to paint the picture of it. But when we hear something in the ring, it resonates more. So not only do we have the visual sensory nerves, we have auditory sensory nerves going in, and it helps us with our emotion and how we feel about something. And think about auditory. Music. How many times have you heard an old song that you hadn't heard in years? And just hearing that brings back the emotion and the senses of a place you may have been when you heard it. Maybe in high school or college or at a party or something that brought back a memory, good or bad. You know? But still, it makes you feel something. So even though we haven't been hit with brass knuckles, we could see it. Even though we've never been hit with a chair, we can what? We can see the hit. We can see the wrestler selling the injury. But we can hear that thud. Okay. That's why it's so good to use foreign objects that also not only visualize, but auditory, we can hear it. So that's why the table was such a good one, because you could hear the crack of the table. You could hear the wood splintering. The bamboo stick. I mean, let's be honest. Okay? If I'm going to look for something under the ring in a no-holds-barred, extreme rules match, all that, why am I going for a bamboo stick? I'm not. I'm going for a lead pipe. I'm going to hit you hard. Okay? And so just like metal, the ring post, the wrestler puts his hand out in front of his head as he makes contact so he can make that smacking noise. I know we laugh about thigh slaps, but why do wrestlers slap their thigh? To make the sound. Why to this day do we all get excited about a chest chomp? And we've seen in AEW Danielson and Jericho and some of the wrestlers from Japan. And I mean, you hear that smack. You hear that. And it makes an impact. And you're like, oh God, that must have hurt. I mean, think about it. Something as simple as slapping someone on the chest, and it does hurt. Don't get me wrong, it does hurt. But why, you know, why is that so effective? I mean, the chest slap, that chop, today, I mean, Ric Flair made it so much of his, you know, every match, that no matter who the wrestler is, no matter what promotion you're in, AEW, WWE, wherever you're at, when somebody starts getting out the chops, we automatically hear the woo. We hear the Flair woos. I mean, seriously. So, that noise. Jeff Jarrett. Jeff Jarrett never played a guitar in his life. Carries it to the ring. He ain't even a country music singer anymore. He's don't even doing that gimmick. It made sense when you get, but why? And we love it because we love the guitar shot. Why? Because it's wood and we hear it and it makes a thud. It makes a sound. So we love the guitar shot. So it's the same thing with tables. When the tables come out, people get excited because they know someone's going to go through a table. Okay, so that being said, when did tables first begin? Have you thought about that? You look on the internet, and there's some websites that say the first table spot was 95. Diesel and Bret Hart Survivor Series. Diesel takes Bret out, puts him through the table. Bret barely makes it in, rolls up Diesel for the pin. And by the way, Wardlow, CM Punk, exact same spot set up. That was an homage to that match. Okay, so we know Punk loves Bret Hart, so that's what that was. But actually, it goes back a little earlier. Now, as I was doing some research, and there may have been some something in the 70s, especially in Memphis. Jerry Jarrett was notorious for doing different types of gimmick matches. The first concession stand brawl happened in Tupelo, Mississippi, with some of those guys. But one of the most iconic, I think, that really stood out was also down from around Memphis when Randy Savage, the Macho Man, Randy Savage, after the stint with his dad, and he did some stuff in Memphis, and I think this was in the early 80s, right before he went to the WWF. But he took Ricky Morton. And this is before Ricky Morton and Robert Gibson made it to Jim Crockett and really blew up as the Rock and Roll Express. I mean, they had in Mid-South and World Class also, but got on that national stage where they got on TBS. But Ricky Morton and the Macho Man done a pile driver. Now, that's the other thing. You got to remember, back in the day, in some territories, the pile driver was banned. If you dropped a guy on his head, you could break his neck, and the pile driver was actually banned. Now, I don't know if it was banned at this time in this promotion, but Savage put Ricky Morton through a table outside the ring, pile drived him through the table. The table crashes. Both of them are laying there almost lifeless, and you can pretty much hear a pin drop. People did not know what to think about this, okay? This was just crazy for that time. Also, in that same mid-80s in Memphis, Tojo Yamamoto in Memphis, he had some faction of guys with him, and I don't even remember who it was, but I remember they're reading about this, that they DDT'd Tracy Smothers to a table. Again, you know, high impact. And that was something that, oh my gosh, he went through the table? I can't believe that. Another common one that is talked about in 89, the Flair and Steamboat trilogy. Flair wins the title back in 89. Terry Funk has just come into WCW, and he wants to go down and shake Flair's hand and wants to declare himself as the next contender. Flair dismisses him, and Terry Funk puts Flair through a table. So we did see some in the 80s, okay? Now, no, it may have not been on WWF or may have not been on Superstars, and there may have been a match or a house show that had happened, but I really couldn't find anything. But then what really made the tables, we get those 90s. ECW, they're going extreme. They're going through tables. They're going through all this stuff. We see this happening. You know, Sabu, Sandman, you know, Cactus Jack when he's there, Tommy Dreamer, all these guys, and they're using tables left and right, and they're going through tables. And as people started to see this in the 90s, they started enjoying it, gravitating towards it. And of course, we get the Dudleys. You know, when they're in ECW, before they even come to WWF. But in the meantime, before they get to WWF, there's two boys from North Carolina, my neck of the woods, Jeff and Matt Hardy, start their own independent wrestling promotion, just a bunch of teenage boys. And one guy, because I know Matt Hardy's talked about when they first started, the one guy, I think it may have been the oldest one of the group, I think is Cameron Grimes' dad. And he was like in his 20s while the rest of them were in teens. And he had a job and had a license, so they depend upon him for a lot. But, you know, they had saw this ECW stuff, and here they were in bingo halls and, you know, American Legion halls and stuff like that, Moose Lodge, whatever. And they were doing ladders, and they were going through tables. So, naturally, when they come and finally make it to the WWF, and they're starting to do stuff, them with Edge and Christian, you know, starting out with the ladders, and then the Dudleys get involved, and they make it to WWF, and then, you know, get the, you know, Devon, get out the tables. So, you've got all this going on with those three tag teams, the TLC, which became so big it actually became its own pay-per-view. But we'll save that for another episode. But they're going through this stuff. And then it continues as the table is used. Now, right then, in that 90s to 2000s, the table changed. Okay? Originally, the table was more set up for the heel. Because the heel, like I said at the beginning, puts the face through the table, makes him vulnerable, makes him weak, makes it look better when he pins him that he didn't just flat out beat him. He used something for him. But then as we started getting in to the 2000s, we notice the change to where sometimes the babyface might drag out the table. Or then, like I said, you've got a gimmick match where the table is involved. You expect the table to be used. And you pull out the table. And sometimes, again, we love the tables, we love the thud, we love the sound, but it can be overdone. So as time has waned on, we've seen different things with it. You know, then the big thing is putting celebrities through tables. Or should I go back to the Dudley Boys and the women, all the women getting hit through tables? We just thought that was crazy. But then we get, like I said, celebrities, different celebrities have been put through tables. You know, I think about recently, you know, you had Shaquille O'Neal. Cody Rhodes put him through a table. We had Logan Paul go through a table, you know, flying up and putting Roman through the table. So faces have used it. But let's look at the primary structure now of how it happens. A lot of times, unless if it is a specific gimmick match, or even if it is, you know, I would say probably 75% of the time, the heel will pull the table out, set it up, and then we will see the heel and the face, you know, wrestling around on the top turnbuckle or on the apron, somewhere close to it, and it looks like the face is going to go through the table, and then at the last minute, boom, we've got the heel going through, just like in, let's go back, let's do that, let's talk about that, let's not only talk about tables, let's, flaming tables, well, yes, how can I not talk about tables without talking about Edge and Mick Foley, right? So this one, you got the table, it's been sitting there, and, you know, Edge puts Mick Foley through the flaming table. They get on fire, and it protects Mick Foley because, I mean, hey, how are you going to beat the hardcore legend? You got to put him through a table. We had Cody Rhodes and Andrade go through a flaming table. You know, that one burnt Cody more than it did Andrade, you know, it's supposed to. But you see the thing. But it'll be set up, and either one can end up going through the table, and it just depends. But, you know, we hear the chant. We want tables. And if it's some type of gimmick matches, it's going to be. Now, what I like, I think is a great story device, is you set up a table, but then you don't deliver the table, you deliver something else. Briscoe's FTR. Okay, they've had this great trilogy in 2022. You know, our thoughts and prayers go out to the family of Jay Briscoe. But Cash and Mark Briscoe, the table is up. And also there's a pile of chairs in the floor. And the table's been sitting there. And just when you think somebody's going to go through the table, Mark Briscoe ends up going over the table and into the pile of chairs. And to me, that was more effective. You still had the noise. I'm sure it hurt more. You had the noise. You had everything, the drama and all that. But that's the table threw you off the scent. And sometimes we need that because tables are used so much. Sometimes we need the tables to just be there as a set dressing, you know, but not actually used, but use something else. We've seen lots of botches in tables. Rey Fénix, what was it, over a year ago, messed his elbow up through a table. We've had people getting cut going through tables, people breaking stuff, different things. So tables can be dangerous, but they can be a good device when used properly. But like I said, sometimes we need to back off of them. And that's where I think we need to do now, because anytime a heel uses the same thing over and over and over again, it can grow old. So sometimes you need to, you know, mix it up a little bit. Do something else. Just like MJF and his championship win over Jon Moxley. The drama in it was he said he would not use the diamond ring. But was he going to use something else? A lot of people speculated. Is Regal going to turn and give him the brass knuckles? So, you know, sometimes you need the table there, but then you don't need them to actually go through it. Or like announcers' tables. You know, those don't give as much. And those are already there on site. So those can be easily accessible to where it looks like, okay, I'm not pulling a table out from under the ring, but instead I'm going to use a table that's already been here and it doesn't look contrived. It's already just there. And I think that's a good point. If you can use a table that's already there, that way you don't have to go to the trouble to pull it out and to set it up, but it's something that's already there. So I think that's a good device too. So finding ways to use tables that are already set up, or finding different ways of not using a table after it's been set up, I think are some really good ways now that I look for, besides just the table spot. You know, how do we get the table? How do we get the action to where it doesn't look like it is choreography or contrived to get over to that table spot? Sometimes I think, you know, I personally like the tables that are put up and forgot about, then they're brought back later. But anyway, that's just my opinion. But as I said, tables can be very effective, especially with heels. But now, just as I said in some of my first episodes about how the difference between in the early days, we had a clear cut, who's the bad guy, who's the good guy. Then with the NWO and going forward there in late 90s through 2000s, we had the anti-hero or the anti-heel, to where now the lines are blurred more. And sometimes we get storylines where we definitely know who the babyface and heel is. But we get some where we have situational heels. We get some where it's, it's just completely different on different aspects. So, we, you know, as far as tables, in the older days, it was definitely a heel trope that the heel was going to put you through the table. Now, like I said, especially with Extreme Rules matches and stuff like that, we have the baby faces pulling out tables. But then I think primarily just a regular match, it's okay. The heel may pull the table out to try to use it, but may be full. But yeah, tables are always fun. They are dangerous. So when we see the wrestlers go through a table, always know that they're doing a lot of work. They are doing a lot of punishment on their body and all this other stuff to entertain us. I mean, think about it. At 63 years old, Sting is jumping off balconies, doing table spots. I remember I laughed, I think it was during Darby Allin or maybe a Matt Hardy interview on a podcast when, you know, Sting was there, and it was Sting and Darby and Jeff and Matt in that wild match there that was in the just everywhere. And said when they were going through the building and they were out sort of in the hallway, and I think Darby may have said, oh, there's a ledge up there, you know, I'm talking about, because the spot where the Butcher and the Blade were laying on the merch tables, and he was like, oh, that'd be a good spot. And they were like, okay, who's going to go up there and jump off of it? And Sting was like, I'll do it. And they were like, no, you're not climbing up there. So that's where Jeff Hardy did it. So remember, every time you see 63-year-old Sting go through a table, he's doing it for your entertainment. So what are some heel devices, heel tropes that you guys like? We talked about tables. I've talked about the rich gimmick. So, you know, let me know. Send me a message in the replies or in the DM about some, you know, maybe some other heel things that you really like. Okay, so I think that's it today for tables, but I hope you enjoy that. Like I said, we're just talking about some of the things and give you a little history on tables. I am going to read a 5-star Apple review, and this is from Will Gray. And yes, that is the Will Gray from Bot Spots and Chair Shots. Love you, Will. Appreciate you. This was back in December. He gave me a 5-star on Apple and said, best heel in the IWC. If you enjoy quality wrestling content without the drama of modern wrestling, you need Ted in your life. He gives a no-nonsense look at pro wrestling through the eyes of a man who knows the history of the business. Thank you, Will, for that. We appreciate that. And like I said, you can leave a 5-star review on Apple and we will read that. Or you can give me a 5-star rating on Spotify, screenshot that, and leave it in the replies, or send me a DM. And hopefully here in the next couple of weeks, we will have our email up and running. And if you don't aren't on Twitter or whatever, and you just want to send me a an email, you can do that. Okay, so I think that's it, Daniel. Is that everything? Again, we thank you for your support. Be looking out for the pinned tweet. We just appreciate each and every one of you for making us the number one show in Antarctica. Appreciate my fans down there. Appreciate you guys. And until next time, there's the real truth, then there's the heel truth.